Welcome back to The Business Drink. I'm Bill Decker, and I'm in the studio today with Melissa Horn. Melissa, do you ever wonder why people should listen to The Business Drink?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah, we've been listening to it for hours. We don't get it.
I know.
This is really the only radio show that really talks about international business and how to do it.
Are you sure?
You're sitting right here in the studio with me. Haven't you been paying attention?
I have been paying attention. You know, honestly, I haven't ever heard anything like this before.
Well, you're wearing an iPod. Maybe if you tuned into the show, you'd actually hear what we're talking about.
I think you've clued into something for sure.
So today we'll talk about what? The top 10 false assumptions in international business.
Okay.
What do you think of this one about the international market? People say there's an international market, and I would say there's no such thing.
Well, why would you say there's no such thing? I mean, if I was NASCAR and I was advertising to anywhere who would, you know, buy into racing, that would be my international market, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but the international market implies there's two markets, here and there.
Us and them.
Yes, us and them. We and they. But when people talk about international market, I always add an S and say international markets. Which do you mean? Romania, Greece, Turkey? I mean, they're all very different.
I see.
And what you need to sell in China is very different than what you need to sell in, say, Switzerland.
So you don't think that, you know, my campaign into Iceland would read in Malaysia?
No, I don't think so. First of all, the Malays are Chinese and Muslim, so mm-hmm. they wouldn't even read this Icelandic. And they have different buying cues, and it really may require a different business model.
So what do you think can be done to sort of change that view?
Well, you got to go local. You got to sit there and do your local view and say, okay, I'm selling in Malaysia. What are the Malaysians going to demand? How are they going to buy? What do they regard as truth?
I see. So what about these people who argue that, like, because of something like McDonald's, when you go to Saudi Arabia and you get a hamburger, you're getting the same hamburger as you're getting in Moscow?
In many cases, you can sell product across the board that way. However, there's still localization. For example, when you walk into the Saudi McDonald's, the stuff's written in Arabic. Right?
Mm.
In the Taiwan McDonald's, there is real milk in the milkshakes. In European McDonald's, there's beer.
In the milkshakes?
No, not in the milkshakes. There's beer in the McDonald's.
That doesn't sound good at all.
Well, those Taiwanese love the beer in the milkshake. So this whole idea, you know, in Moscow, when we opened the first McDonald's, I got involved in that project. There were 22,000 people a day waiting online.
Really?
More than the National Museum of Russia.
I believe it. I was there during that time period, and these little boys would come from, like, we would be sitting in traffic, and they would come running to your car, like, please let us go and buy you a hamburger, and then they would wait in line for people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a sad situation, but I remember it being just packed. Absolutely ridiculous.
Selling hamburgers online, I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
When Russians would do this, you know, and they'd buy six hamburgers and they'd sell them to you.
But I remember it was like a fine dining experience for them. I mean, that was sort of their first representation of freedom.
Well, have you ever really had Russian food? I mean, let's be fair. It is a fine dining experience.
I have had Russian food.
You know, people give Russian food a bad name. I don't know why. I happen to love boiled meat sitting in... No, I'm sorry.
Swirly soup.
Yes.
Okay.
So the next assumption is this idea that business is business. That the planet is shrinking, and therefore we all understand how to work together.
You mean the world is flat?
The world's flat
mm-hmm.
and small, and small and flat.
Well, sure, technology, internet, computers, that's connected us all. We can do business in Peru the same day we can do it in California.
The same day, but not the same way. We've got to look at the Peruvians, and we've got to work with them on their basis. And business is not business across the board. In most of the countries that you and I work in, business is personal. Personal relationships, and they'll work with a weaker vendor, you know, but someone that they're closer with.
People here say all the time business development's dead.
Business development's dead?
That we don't need those relationships anymore because we can get them through web blasts and
really?
Email campaigns
how do
and
I
that
do
sort
that?
Of thing.
Well, how do I get on that party? I've never seen anyone get into a country on a serious way, in a meaningful way, without direct human contact. I've never seen it happen. Maybe you get a couple of leads, maybe even you get a couple of sales.
Buy a billboard?
Yeah. I consider it market research.
If I'm
selling a soft drink and someone buys a few cases, I consider that market research, not necessarily a real customer.
So it's all about relationships.
Well, it always will be. It always will be. And, you know, people say, well, we do relationship building in our business. Yeah, but you build a relationship in 4 hours here. One golf game
exactly.
And you're best friends.
You can buy me golf and I'll be your best friend for sure.
Yeah, one guy came to me and said, I can do everything in China. I've been there 6 months.
That's funny.
Yeah, said, you can't read a menu, you know. Next false assumption is that we have these technical skills and they will transfer abroad. So if you're a CFO here, you could be a CFO in Germany.
Yeah, I know this. They're not set up the same way.
They're not set up the same way. Different standards, different accounting, different packages.
I know that a lot of engineers and architects were running into these problems when they started to go into China. I mean, China spends 36% of their GDP on new construction right now, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
But they up until very recently, were using, you don't understand code? Code that rules how things get built, but they were using Soviet code from the 50s. And so how could any American or Western business person in engineering go over there and build a building to those standards, ethically or understandably?
I ran into that in Central Europe when we would sell gas and propane gas in tanks, and they would say this tank is not up to regulation. And the regulations were written by Joe Stalin. You know, and we have these tanks now that don't explode. I don't know if you've seen them, but
I've heard of them.
They're just a wonderful thing. So our skills did not transfer abroad. A contract comes at the end of the process. A deal is a deal. And the American way is, you know, we negotiate, we work together, we get to know each other, then we sign and that's it. That's law.
Yeah, that is law.
Yeah, here. But of course, it isn't even law here. Because how many times do you hear about contracts being breached and lawyers and, you know, why do lawyers exist if everyone just keeps their word?
You're right.
But, you know, what happens in places like Asia, Central Europe, even Southern Europe, you sign a contract and then you begin negotiating.
Really?
In Korea, a contract loosely translates to outline.
Okay, so when you say sign a contract, are you talking about the financial end of things is already written in paper and then you negotiate what your scope of services is?
Yes. And the financial thing can change. Many times I've been with Westerners, we've signed a contract in a place like Taiwan. And the Taiwanese come back a couple of weeks later and say, well, we can't do it for that.
So, but basically you're saying that there's no real security in what you're investing by going there.
Not by rule of law, but pardon the expression, by rule of man. Man including, you know, women. Woman and man. So if I know you, if we work together and we know each other and we trust each other, then a contract is really just a memory protector.
I see.
Because if we have a strong relationship, we're really going to work together. And if there's a difference in opinion or a difference in circumstances, we're going to work to change that, as opposed to this holy piece of paper. I'm going to rattle the paper, binding us and forcing us down law. I was just with a company, and they signed a contract in India. And the Indians, of course, reneged on the contract. And this American company said, well, we're going to sue them. And I said, well, how? In Indian court. So my joke is, yay, you win. Hooray! You're never going to collect, but you won. It's wonderful. Doing international business is cheap, even free.
What is if you do web blast?
Yeah, but you don't get any business done. But people have, you know, I wrote an article about this, and I said, this just scares me. People literally will come to me and say, get me into Japan, and I'll pay you a commission. So getting into Japan, that's like a 2-3 year process. I've got to have stuff translated. I've got to get business licenses. I've got to get partners. I've got to check market conditions. So this straight commission business model is just not going to work. The idea of, oh, we'll pay you later if you get in. You have to do a whole bunch of things to get your company ready to go into a place like Japan. If they speak like us, they think like us. I work in Canada a lot. And Canadians, you know, they speak English. And I'm from New York. And I meet someone from Toronto. And they kind of speak with an Eastern accent. And we have nothing in common. They're socialized. They're bilingual. You know,
right. They
care about people they've never met. Hence, that's how I define socialism. You know, I'm this New Yorker, and we're about money and profit and deals. And we have very, very little in common, even though they dress like me, and it's a financial center, and they wear a suit, and they speak English.
I'm going to ask you a question. It's kind of a generalization, but in your experiences, have you found any one of these countries that speak English natively or more successful, say in China, or Americans dominating, or is it pretty much just a big mix of success?
It's a good question, and I believe that it's not a native English country. It's a country where they embrace English. I find Dutch to be very, very successful in China.
Really?
Very, very successful.
I wonder why.
Well, first of all, they don't have the American stigma.
That's true.
They're not carrying, you know, the controversy that America carries. Nobody likes America. People love us and hate us. It's usually a combination of those two things. And even here in America, we love and hate our country. We criticize it, but we love it.
Right.
And the Dutch are very, very low profile. The Dutch are not controversial. The Dutch don't preach. The Dutch don't tell countries how to run themselves. They figure out how to trade. America, because we're a donor nation, feels we can then dictate policy, whereas the Dutch will say trade, not aid. Success overseas depends on how good our product or service is.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And we make the better mousetrap, we should sell. This is an assumption. It's a false assumption.
Why?
Because it's really not about the better mousetrap. It's about the better customer intimacy.
You're telling me that a person in China doesn't want the best refrigerator?
That's correct. That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Why?
They will buy an inferior refrigerator from someone they know and trust instead of a superior refrigerator from a company that really doesn't have any relationship.
But they might end up buying 10 refrigerators to my one really great one.
They might. But they don't look at empirical evidence the same way we do, where we start taking these reports and say this one lasts this long and this does this. They go by what they know. So we're all kind of slaves to this history. My uncle said this is the best. It's the best. My uncle said I could trust you. I trust you. Not you've come here, you've given me a resume, you've shown me credentials.
So how does a marketer go into one of these countries with that sort of thing and build those relationships?
You can build them
with
or you
a
can,
brand.
You can build them or buy them, and you should do both.
Now, how would you buy one?
This is how I make a living. You pay me. You give me a lot of money, and I market your product.
Okay.
It's all about knowing the right people.
Back to the relationships.
And you're back to the relationships. Hmm. Money is the ultimate reward. Next false assumption. I remember we had to close factories in Poland, and we went to the factory managers and said, if you close some of this factory or you lay off some people, we'll pay you.
How'd the Poles take that?
They said, we're employers. We're responsible for these people. We live in this small town. We live in, you know, Wamża in Poland. We're the only game in town. These 2,000 people that work, if I get rid of 400 of them, maybe the operation is leaner and more profitable, but I got to face these people. I see them in church. I see them in the restaurant. You know, I'm eating a pierogi. I'm running into some guy I just fired. So this idea of almighty buck may be an American idea, but it's really not in a lot of the countries where they're concerned about jobs and social welfare and taking care of each other.
That's really evident even in what the Polish did after the collapse of communism. I mean, they approached the market system and the change into more of a free state quite differently than the rest of the Eastern Bloc did.
And if you see places like Russia, and I saw it in Israel, you'd see companies open that didn't make money, but they needed to have people settling in certain parts of it. You know, Israel is in this war-torn part of the world, so they need people living by the borders. So they're making, you know, wristwatches up near the Lebanese border. But, you know, where there's people, there's military. And where there's military, there's guns. And where there's guns, there's defense. So
did those people close the factory down? Did they have to?
Up near Lebanon? I don't think it got hit by a Scud. I think we're safe.
No, in Poland.
In Poland? We're switching countries left and right here. Let's go to our last assumption. The number one assumption, if it worked in our market, it'll work in theirs.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's completely false.
Why?
Because it doesn't necessarily work overseas. We fail as Americans 82% of the time.
That's awful.
I know. More than 4 out of 5. You wouldn't play poker with those odds.
That's the worst statistic I've ever heard.
Yes, well, there'll be more of these kernels of wisdom if you tune into The Business Drink. This is really the only show where you can really talk about these international issues. I'm Bill Decker, and I'm here with Melissa Horn.